will be a short series here for us concerning Joseph. But I do want to say that it's been several years since I've presented God's Word on Joseph, the life of Joseph, and the lessons that we can learn there. In the upcoming weeks, we will do a short study and take a closer look at this man, the challenges that he faced, and his amazing heart. He's an example of true integrity, honor, and reverence, really from his youth to the very end of his life. One that is dedicated to God and used by God to do so many great things. And that is obviously true as we look at him. What an extraordinary man. What an extraordinary life. Even as a youth, we're going to see him promptly disapprove of evil, and we'll see him handle these things under great duress, under great stress, as an individual who is surrounded by people in his life who aren't following the Lord. The people in his own family are not following the Lord. And so my first point about Joseph is there is no excuse for sin. And it's broader than just the personal application for you individually. There's no excuse for sin. That's for you. But it's also broader than that. Christians and the Lord's church must be very careful not to make excuses for those around us or for ourselves who have had a tough time in this life. It's not an excuse for sin. Whether it's coming from a broken home, as difficult as that is, an ongoing health problem that plagues us, unbelieving family members who constantly attack us, none of these are excuses or reasons that it's okay with the Lord for us to sin. Joseph's going to show us that, and I love him for that. He speaks to all of us in our personal challenges, so I want this lesson to reach out to you in your personal challenges, what you're dealing with now, the things that you're tempted and tested by, to say, I've seen a man do it the right way, and I want to be just like Joseph. That's going to be here for us as well. Joseph comes from one of the most dysfunctional families in all of the Bible. And we're going to look at that. I'll just give you some brief points about that and just share with you the life of Joseph. We're going to start in chapter 37, where he is going to have these dreams. But let me tell you what happens before that. Genesis 30 is where I asked you to turn. Genesis 30 and verse 22. Afterward, Rachel bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. Rachel here in verse 22. Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. So she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. And he certainly will. Joseph is born in Genesis 30, verses 22 through 24. But as we move forward, we'll see a few things. Even before the birth of Joseph, Genesis 29 and 30, we see what's often called the great baby race. Jacob is Joseph's father, and he has 11 sons and one daughter, Dinah. We read about her. 11 sons and one daughter by four different women. Anybody see trouble there? You read through it. There's trouble. There's fighting. There's infighting. There is envy. There's all kinds of problems with this. And yet, this is by the plan and by the will of God that the tribes of Israel would be born to these women. All of this is done by the will of God. But we can't miss the fact that there's trouble. There's trouble in the home that Joseph is born in. While he's a young boy, he sees great discord between his father and his great uncle, Laban. Joseph is born while Jacob is still serving Laban. I think sometimes we forget about that. Jacob, in his distress, convinces his wives that they need to flee from Laban and do it privately and secretly, not to tell him, but to just run. And so they run from great uncle Laban. Imagine Joseph thinking about this and seeing that they flee to Mount Gilead. Uncle Laban, now he's not okay with this, obviously. He pursues the caravan and he finally catches up to them in chapter 31. And they hash it out there. And just read chapter 31 if you want to see a family argument go horribly wrong. It is awful the way that Laban speaks to Jacob and the way Jacob speaks to Laban about the last 20 years they've spent together and how mean they were to each other, how wicked each one of them behaved in their time together. Laban is so pathetic, saying, "You stole my sons and my daughters, and you fled by night, and you didn't even tell me. I would have let you go with trumpets and with songs." And that's not true. Laban mistreated him constantly. Jacob knows that, and so he gives it back to Laban. Meanwhile, while they're arguing about who's the worst person on the earth, Rachel has stolen Laban's idols. Rachel is Joseph's mother. She's got a bunch of idols she took from her dad's house. And remember, she's hid them in the camel's bag. She's sitting on this camel's bag. Her father comes in to search the tent to see if he can find the idols. And she says, "Please pardon me. The time of women is upon me." So he doesn't ask her to get up. And she's hiding idols. Joseph, a young boy watching his mother behave this way, stealing from her own dad, and then hiding them, and then lying to him about what's happened. Jacob doesn't know she's taken them, so he says, "Whoever has them, let them be put to death." Can you imagine? Laban and Jacob eventually reach an agreement after their pathetic conversation, and this is with God's help. Laban tells Jacob over and over again, I could have done harm to you, but God spoke to me last night. Your God wants you to go be with your father, and so I can't touch you. That's the only reason why Jacob got out of that mess. And he tells Laban, "I fled because I was afraid of you." Imagine your own father telling another man, "We ran, the family and I packed up at night and took off because we were scared." The father of the household. As they travel, it's not over, folks. As they travel away from Laban, they know that they're going to have to meet up with Esau. That is not good. That is Jacob's brother. This is Joseph's uncle. So now they've left Uncle Laban, and now they got to go deal with Uncle Harry, right? We'll just call him Uncle Harry. He was a hairy man. Edom means red. He had red hair. So Uncle Harry's on his way, and Jacob's terrified of Uncle Harry. And Joseph's watching all of this. The last thing that Esau said, as Jacob's mother tells him to flee, Jacob's mother says, Rebekah tells Jacob, "Your brother comforts himself by intending to kill you." Can you imagine that? Your brother only finds comfort, since you stole his blessing with my help, your brother only finds comfort by intending to kill you. That's the only place he finds happiness. Can you imagine your own brother saying that? The only time he's happy is when he's thinking about murdering you. And so Jacob's coming back, and he's going to have to meet with Esau, and he is worried, rightfully so, about that. As he is terrified, he splits up the family into groups. You may remember, he sends them out. The oldest to the youngest. Each group that's been separated by Jacob comes with gifts, and they're to bow down to Esau, and they are to give him these gifts to appease him so that he doesn't kill Jacob when Jacob finally shows up. He sends them out at night. Imagine young Joseph. Dad is sending you out in groups, separating the family because he's scared of another man, his own brother, your uncle. And now you're going out at night to go bow down before this man whom you've never met, knowing that he may kill your entire family. What a life, huh? What a life. Jacob waits behind as he sends the family in front of him to go meet with Esau. And remember, the Lord meets him there that night, and God wrestles with him all night long. The next day, Joseph is going to see his dad limping around from his wrestling match and making up with Uncle Esau. He's going to watch his dad behave with his brother and how he handles Uncle Harry. Once they're in Shechem, they did make peace. Once they make it to Shechem, Joseph's sister Dinah goes out to see the daughters of the land, we're told in Scripture. The prince of Shechem takes her by force, lies with her, and violates her. Joseph's sister, Joseph's older sister. His two older brothers, Simeon and Levi, devise a plan and convince all the men of Shechem to be circumcised. They say to the men of Shechem, "If you'll be circumcised, then we'll let you have Dinah and we'll all be one family." And so the men of Shechem say, "Okay, we'll do that." So they are all circumcised. On the third day, while the men in the city are in great pain, Simeon and Levi kill everyone in the city and they plunder their cattle and goods. Jacob is so angry that he tells Simeon and Levi that the inhabitants of this land, we're going to be obnoxious to them. They're not going to look favorably upon us. You can't go slaughtering entire cities and come up with schemes such as you have. And the two boys say, "Was it right for him to mistreat our sister?" So imagine the family issues going on. His sister is damaged goods forever. She's a damaged individual. She's been hurt. She's been taken. And Joseph is a young man. He's watching these things unfold. The behavior of humanity, the brothers and sisters around him who are sinning constantly. It's not just that he says, hey, I had a dream and I'm just going to do what God tells me. He's got a lot of pressure on him, and we can't miss that. We have to see that in his life. The Lord tells Jacob that he needs to go to Bethel. And so Jacob takes the family with him. And this really is a beautiful moment in time for the family because, again, Joseph's watching his dad. We know that his dad treats Joseph favorably. But he tells the family, put away your idols, purify yourselves, and change your garments. Joseph's going to see his dad bring the family in and say, that's it. Get these idols out of here. Finally, dad's taking a stand. No more idolatry. Purify yourselves. Cleanse yourselves. We are going to worship the Lord. And Joseph, watching his father clean house, sets the tone for this young man. This is a great moment for him with all of the mess going on. As they're traveling to Bethel, Joseph's mother, Rachel, she goes into labor. She's about to have Benjamin. She goes into labor on the road. The Bible tells us that they were just a little distance from Ephrath. Genesis 35 and verse 16. Rachel will die in labor, and Joseph will lose his mother on the side of the road. And on the same day, Joseph is given his only true baby brother. Who wants to deal with that? Who wants to tell that story? I watched my mother die on the side of the road when my brother was born. That affects us. That changes the way we think about things. And yet, in all of this, God is watching Joseph. God is with him. God has plans for this young man. And the Lord needs him to walk with integrity. He needs him to make good decisions and do what is right. He needs him to follow the plan. Even later in Genesis 35 and verse 22, we see that Reuben lays with Bilhah. Reuben is the son of Jacob. Bilhah is Jacob's wife or his concubine. And it tells us that Jacob knows that Reuben has laid with Bilhah. Again, imagine the consequences of that. Bilhah is Dan and Naphtali's mother. And now Reuben has gone into her. Imagine the challenges in all of that. Jacob's the father. Everyone knows about it. It's horrible. No family should live this way. No children should behave this way as it pertains to their own father. It's disgusting. And Joseph is exposed to it before Genesis chapter 37. And so let's look at Genesis 37 together, beginning in verse 1. Please remember with me as we begin reading that Joseph has seen his family fighting. He's seen them involved in idolatry. He's seen deception and stealing from one another and to one another. He's seen them lying. His sister has been violated by a foreigner. Two brothers have murdered an entire city. And he's seen his family completely overtaken by fear on multiple occasions. Genesis 37 in verse 1. Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Interesting, Benjamin's still too young. Rachel, his mother, has passed, and so we find Joseph in chapter 17 feeding the flock. A lot of times we think about Joseph as the favorite. He got the coat of many colors, but he wasn't pampered. Jacob didn't set him aside and say, you don't have to do anything. We're going to take care of you. You're my favorite. Jacob loves his son, and so he sends him out. He's working. He's feeding the flock, just like his brothers. We see no partiality here. He is with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. That would be Gad, Asher, Dan, and Naphtali. These are the brothers that he's with. We don't know, the Bible doesn't tell us what evil they've done or what they've been involved in, but we do know that Joseph has come to his father, Jacob, and he's given a bad report of their behavior. He's told Jacob what they have been doing. So again, at a very young age, the boy is 17. He's old enough to know the difference between good and evil. He sees something going on that's wrong, and he reports it to his dad. That's what he should do, because his dad's in charge of the family, and his dad should be the one to handle any evil that's going on in his own home. Verse 3, now Israel loved Joseph more than all of his children, and that is a shame, because he was the son of his old age. Also, he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all of his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Israel loved Joseph more than all of the children. It tells us because he was the son of his old age. And I can only imagine what that would mean. Being more in the position of a grandfather role because of the age of Israel, he now looks down at Joseph and he is the son of his old age. Again, Benjamin's too young for this kind of favoritism to be showered upon him, at least to the degree that the brothers would be envious. He is the firstborn son of Rachel. Rachel is the one that Joseph loved the most. I think about Joseph at 17 and his father Jacob. I think about relationship between father and son and the lives we have today. And you know, he must have told him some wonderful things about his life and his experiences and even about God, right? Jacob speaking to his son Joseph, the one he favored. You know, come here, son. I want to tell you something about what's happened to me, what God has done for me. You know why I limp? You know why I don't walk the way I used to? Why, Dad? Because I wrestled with God. And he blessed me that night. Can you imagine that conversation with Joseph? Imagine him talking about Esau and his mistakes, that he lied to his father to have the blessing stolen. And he knows that was wrong, that Joseph would be listening to that. This is why it's wrong. It wasn't rightfully mine. My mother and I planned this thing. We did this thing. I put hair on my arms to trick my father who was blind. And it was wrong, Joseph. Joseph, I want to tell you something else about a dream that I had. I think that's cool. I want to tell you about a dream and a vision that I saw. There was a ladder and it reached all the way to heaven and it came down to the earth. There were angels on that ladder, ascending and descending. And God himself was above that ladder, Joseph, and he spoke to me. He promised the same promise that he gave to your great-great-grandfather, Abraham, that by his seed, many nations will be blessed. You're part of that lineage, Joseph. God has said it to me personally in a vision. I had a dream, son. Can you imagine? Joseph's going to have a dream too. The brothers see this favoritism, and that's why this is not good. They don't like it, and who would? They could not speak peaceably or kindly to him. Imagine dealing with that. You got 10 older brothers, and not one of them can think of one nice thing to say to you. You're the youngest who's out working in the field, and they don't like you. They're your brothers, and none of them can think of one nice thing to say. That hurts. It means they said a lot of bad things. But they couldn't think of one nice thing to say to their youngest brother because he's daddy's favorite, and if he wants daddy, he can have him. And he's grossly mistreated for that. So the stage is set. The dream will come. Look at verse 5. Now Joseph had a dream. And he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, please hear this dream which I have dreamed. You know, in my mind, I'm thinking, Joseph, don't do it. Just keep it to yourself. He's got his brothers gathered around. They hate him. You know, they're all looking at him like, what do you want? What do you want? And he says, I want to tell you about a dream I had. It's really cool. You're going to love this. Check it out. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed, your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf. Isn't that cool? What do you think, guys? And his brother said to him, shall you indeed reign over us, or shall you indeed have dominion over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. He's made a mistake here, it seems, by telling his brothers about this dream. God is speaking to Joseph. It is interesting, too, as they listen to it, that they've got some idea of what it means. He didn't explain it to them. They say, oh, you think you're going to reign over us. Our sheaves are going to bow down to your sheaf. Really? So they understand the dream. God's not only speaking to Joseph, he's speaking to the brothers as well. That's crystal clear here. Down in verse 9, Joseph's not done. He's going to give them a little more. Then he dreamed still another dream and told it to his brothers and said, look, I have dreamed another dream. And this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me. So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I, your brothers, indeed come to bow down to the earth before you? It's interesting, just as a side note, that Jacob mentions his mother. It may be, there's an idea or a picture here understood about eternity. Somehow she's still brought in by the words of Israel. Shall your mother bow down to you as well? And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind. I imagine his father did. My son is dreaming dreams. I have done that as well. There's a lot of great stuff happening here. One is the Lord gives Joseph two dreams. And I think that's important for us. He is reaffirming, this is coming, it is going to happen. It's not crystal clear yet. We don't know how, but it's coming. Your brothers will bow down. Your father will bow down to you, even though that is preposterous. The patriarch never bows down to his offspring, and yet God's going to make it happen. We don't know how yet. So the interesting picture there. Another thing that we don't want to take note of here, and I'll try to mention it as we get there, but remember Pharaoh has a dream. And he goes to the diviners and asks them, you know, what's this dream about? They can't answer him. He has a second dream, but it's different. So the dreams that Pharaoh receives are just like what Joseph has gotten. We look at Joseph interpreting those dreams and we realize that he's seen this before. He knows something about God, the way he works, and how dreams are given, how the Lord speaks to people. So there's a lot of really cool stuff going on. The problem is his brothers hate him. His guts. What I want to give to you here is three points that we can learn from the life of Joseph and what we have looked at together this morning. Lessons from the life of Joseph. Number one, there is no excuse for sin. Joseph has every reason in the world to give up at this point, just to give up. He has one friend in the whole world, and it's his father. And just go do what he wants to do. Everyone else is doing it. Joseph is 17 years old. If you are 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 years old, 18, 20, think about the pressure that this young man is under. He does not have a New Testament. He doesn't even have the Old Testament. How can he stand so strong and be so bold in such a time? What is he looking to? What does he see? What is he thinking about? I want to know more about him. We know that his heart is especially close to his father, and his heart is dedicated and receptive to Almighty God and to his will. That's important. The Lord, please understand, especially to our young people, the Lord has shown us this young boy. And God is telling us, as we watch Joseph, God is telling us that he sees Joseph, he knows all that this young man has endured. And that's important for our young people because we are being challenged to great levels to just forget about the Lord, just do what you want, follow the crowd. No. God's talking to you. God's given you your life. He wants you to know him. He wants you to honor him. He wants you, when those difficult challenges come up, to say, I know what to do. I know what the right thing to do is. And when you see others doing evil, don't participate. Back away from it. That's Joseph. God is showing us Joseph so we would take this lesson and understand it. You can stand up and you can be sterling in your character. That's worth everything, to be sterling in your character, to stand up. To be strong when no one else is even trying. To work contrary to the pressures of the stream that is coming down upon us. God has taken one life surrounded by sin and abuse. And he uses this one life to change the course of the world. He knows who you are. He knows where you are. He knows everything about you. And he loves you more than any person ever could. He's given us proof of that. And we want to walk in integrity. We want to follow God. We want to stand up and be a shining light for Him on His behalf, come what may. The Lord's not going to make me number two in charge of Egypt. That's not going to happen in my life. That's not the promise. The promise is eternity. God says, take my hand and walk with me. And Joseph gladly does that. And we're going to watch this young man succeed. There is no excuse for sin. Put it away. For ourselves and for others around us who say, well, I would, but I got this thing. I could do better, but no, we got to shut the door on that. That is not true. We do have situations, we have challenges in our life that we have to get through. There's things that must be handled, certainly, but there is never a good excuse to live in sin. Number two, partiality is wrong. Jacob was wrong to show such favoritism to Joseph. It wasn't fair to the other children, that's obviously true, but you know, it wasn't fair to Joseph either. You know, his dad puts the coat on him and wants to show him how much he loves him and appreciates the one boy, the youngest. And so the others are just made to watch this and just be subject to this idea that I'm not loved as much as another child in this family. Fathers, mothers, grandparents, don't do it. Anyone who's honest about our kids, we look at them and we know that they're different. And they learn to love us because we're not perfect as parents. They learn to love us as mom and dad, two individuals, for different reasons. Parents never come to the kids and go, okay, it's time. Which one do you love more, mom or dad? Don't forget what I did for you. Which one do you love more? You know, we don't do that. Why? Because it's wrong. Why would we ask our children to split up or divide their love and affection for us? We can't do that because she's mom. That's not fair. I'm dad. We both have roles that God expects us to be involved in. Our children will appreciate both roles as they grow up. But to show favoritism and to make it painfully obvious is wrong. God tells us in Leviticus 19:15, partiality is an injustice when you judge. Romans 2 and verse 11, there is no partiality with God. And if we're going to walk as dear children of God and walk in His footsteps, there is no partiality with God. James 2 and verse 9, James tells us that if you show partiality, you commit sin and you are convicted by the law as transgressors. So we don't want to do that. You understand that partiality affects your judgment. You have five or six kids and your favorite, the one you've chosen to be your favorite, gets less punishment for the same transgressions within the household. That's not fair. That's not right. Children recognize that. Don't tell me you don't either. All of you that grew up in houses with brothers and sisters, we looked at one and you say, wait a second, last time I did that, these were the penalties. How come you're just telling them that they can't drive for a week or something? You know, and parents are like, well, we like them more. That's obviously the reason. What do you do? The punishment needs to be consistent, be the same. Because kids pick up on that. It flaws our judgment, as is recorded for us in Leviticus chapter 19. The third point I have for us this morning that I want us to see clearly is that envy destroys. Envy destroys. These brothers are going to plot the death of Joseph. He's 17 years old, and they're going to plan his murder because of envy. They're going to sin against their own flesh and blood. They plan to lie to their father about what happened to Joseph. God has given Joseph the same message in two different dreams. And he's told his brothers, he's compelled to tell his brothers, they're not able to discern the impact of this heavenly vision because they are consumed with envy. You understand that? He says to them, I've had two dreams now. And they are so angry at him. They hate him so much that even though they can interpret the dream, they cannot discern. None of them are capable of saying, okay, if that's God's will, then let's move forward together on this. Not one of them. Why? Because of envy. It destroys the people who are envied. That would be Joseph in this case. And it destroys those who are envious, the brothers. Everyone's ruined when we're envious. Galatians 5 and verse 19, if you'll turn there with me. Galatians 5, 19. I just want us to see the works of the flesh. Paul says to us in 19 that they are evident, which are adultery, fornications, uncleanness, lewdness. Watch as we get close to envy, what kind of circles around that, these words that are around that. Idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like. Romans 1:29 tells us that the unrighteous are filled with wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, and, you guessed it, murder. Envy is a terrible thing, and it's so easy to be subject to it, and we've got to be careful. They are full of envy, murder, and strife. James 3:16, for where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 4 says, love does not envy. We are children of God. We are people of love. It is the bond of perfection. Love does not envy. If that's in your life today, if it's in your heart, if it's injuring you, eliminate it. We are so blessed by God. I want to say something to you about who you are and the role that I play here as the gospel preacher. I look around at the world, I see people have a lot more than I do. That's just a fact. There's some things I'd like to do, some things I'd like to see, but let me say to you as plainly as I can, I envy no man. There is no one in this world that I envy because God has been so good to me. I have children who are with me, who are here. I have a wife who loves me and tends to me, to my needs. And I have you. Each and every one of you are a part of the reason that I envy no man. I have you. We have a connection that God has blessed us with. We're spending time together today. I look forward to it every Sunday. I look forward to being with you. I look forward to seeing you, to hearing your voice, and to knowing you better. When you're blessed by God the way that we have been, it is a mistake. It's a mistake to look out, to flip through those photos of the rich and the famous or whoever it is. It's just a mistake. Those people work so hard to make themselves look perfect. And they have a role to play in life. Certainly there's a lot of people that look up to them. I'm not dogging them at all. But they have terrible things happen to them in life. And they're not grounded. They're not secured. They're alone. What an awful place to be. Why would I ever want to be out there with no hope when I can be in here with the hope that God has given each one of us? Such a great thing. I love every one of you. I don't say it enough. I envy no man because of this church and because of my great family. If you need to obey the gospel and be a part of this family that God's given us, you know what you've done. You know that those sins need to be forgiven. You know that Jesus Christ can save your soul by his own blood. He offers that to you today. We want you to be a part of this family, to be a part of this work, to give your life great purpose, to stand like Joseph. I know the difference between right and wrong. I'm going to do what's right. If we can help you, come forward.